Well, I've been having a lot of fun the last couple of weeks listening to how people's stories of what they've done with this relationship series. It's been kind of interesting. Work relationships have changed. Personal relationships have changed. People setting boundaries with other people and being assertive and stuff. And it's just real interesting. Really, really cool. Very, very cool. Surprising, like sometimes, because people are like, yeah, I started doing that on Monday. Like, wow, okay, wow, that's, you know, pastors don't typically get that. So they're like, hey, that was a nice thought. You don't really mean us to live that out, do you? But it's been so, so good. So we're wrapping this relationship series up today. The Bible is just full of relationship advice and insights on relationships. And really, one of the ways that you could look at the Bible is that it's an ongoing dialogue about relationships between people and how those should work out and relationships with God. Ongoing dialogue, because there's some people, like, there's a conversation that's going on in the Bible. It's very, very cool. And so it's just so, so rich and all of this advice and this insight into how life works really well and works best. And we are rich in having and being recipients of all of this, these thousands of years of insights into how life works well, you know, and how to navigate relationships well. Let's see. So the first, just to review, when we get to the end of things, I'd like to review the first week we started talking about the importance of engagement, that you have to love and care about other people enough to engage in the relationships and not just walk away whenever you hit a rub, right? Because if you don't do that, then everything else that we're talking about doesn't really matter. If you just hit a bump and you just walk away, and we're kind of in this consumeristic culture where we, like, you know, we consume people and relationships, but you can't do that if you want to cultivate good relationships with other people. And we got into being assertive and the difference between niceness and kindness. And then the next week, we started talking about healthy boundaries. Talked about that we all have our properties, our lots, you know, and those are all connected to the other people that we are in relationships with. And we need to put our fences along, learn to put our fences along our property lines, you know, and not putting our fence in someone else's property, not in their yard. And we don't need to back our fence off from our property line either. It needs to be on the property line of our yard, you know. Those are healthy boundaries. Had a good question this week. What does that look like for married people? You know, like, where do you put your fence for married people? It's the same place you put your you put your fence along your property line. It just has an open gate in it that you just take it off the hinges. You know, there's still, if you don't do that, then you get into weird things that I'm not the best person to explain, but like you get into codependence and enmeshment and stuff. But there's, like, you know, there's very clear, like Carrie and I, there's very clearly a me, you know, and there's very clearly a Carrie and I, but or Carrie, but there, wow, messed that up. Okay. There's very clearly a Carrie, very clearly a me, and there is a fence right there along the property line, but there's a gate in it that we, free access back and forth, you know, into each other's yards and stuff. And it's, you get into messed up stuff when you don't have, any fence at all. There should be one, but you just leave, like, in marriages, you're just leaving the gate open, you know? And we've just taken ours off the hinges, you know, and thrown it away. That gate's not getting closed. So as long as I don't mess that stuff up, it's good. It's good. Okay, so this week we're getting into something that everybody really loves: conflict, right? Woo! Conflict. So two big things about conflict. One is that you are going to have it. You're going to have conflict. If you're going to be in relationships with people, if you're going to be around human beings at all, you're going to have conflict. People are going to hurt you. They're going to disappoint you. They're going to frustrate you. They're not going to give you what you want. They're not going to say the things that you want them to say. There's going to be small and big differences. They're going to irritate you. And guess what? You're going to do all those wonderful things for other people. You are going to hurt other people. You are going to irritate them. You're going to disappoint them. You're going to let them down. You're going to cause some frustration in other people. You're going to do that. And I'm going to do that for you. And Carrie's going to do that for you. And you guys do that for me. You frustrate me and hurt my feelings, and I say things that do if you that frustrate you and upset you sometimes too. You know, pastors aren't super special holy people. We're human beings because we're people. We hurt each other. Now that's not a sales pitch on this stuff. Sounds bad, right? People should all just leave each other alone. But it is through conflict that we grow. It's through conflict that we grow. If you don't have any conflict, you're not going to grow. So it's something. So conflict is going to happen. It is going to happen. If you are a human being and going to relate in any way to another human being, it is going to happen. But it is also an amazing opportunity because it is a path to growth. It's the way that we grow in our character. It's a sign that we need to grow in our emotional intelligence, our communication skills, our patience, our graciousness with ourselves, our graciousness with other people, our loving kindness, all sorts of good things. It means that our character needs to grow, and it means that our skills need to grow. And conflict get like both is a sign to us that we need to grow, and it also gives us the opportunity to grow. So it's wonderful. It makes us stronger. Like you go through conflicts, and those things make you stronger. They either break you or make you stronger. But hopefully, they will make you stronger. So we don't need to avoid this stuff. They will develop our courage to face conflicts in the future. Be like, hey, wow, I went through this, and I'm still okay. I'm still breathing. Things are fine. I spoke my mind. I set a boundary. I was assertive here. I articulated what I want and what I feel and all these sort of things. And I'm still okay. We had a disagreement and we worked it out. And I'm still okay. It develops our courage for the future and it develops our character. Another thing that it does between people is it develops our trust, right? The longer that you are in a relationship with somebody, a good one, the more that you value that relationship and typically. And one of the reasons for that is because you've been through a lot of stuff, right? You've been through a lot of stuff, and I don't want to go and have to like have the same fights with somebody else that I have with Carrie. Like we fought through a lot of things and we've learned that it's okay and we trust each other. And so our anxiety about future fights and future disagreements and future conflict is really low because we've been through so much stuff together. We have built trust between each other and in our relationship. And that happens in our church, right? The longer that we've been here and the more stuff that we've been through together, the more trust that we have that, hey, everything's going to be okay. You know, we've been through some stuff before. And we can go through some stuff again in the future. And that's hopefully true in work relationships and with your siblings and all sorts of things. So conflict is going to happen, and it can be really, really good. It's a good chance to grow, to become stronger, to develop trust, to develop skills. And a really neat thing for Christians is that Christians have a huge, huge advantage as far as navigating conflict goes. And I've seen this in so many places, so many relationships. One of my favorites is this. I got a call one night, and this lady said her husband was trying to kill her, and she wanted me to come help, but she didn't want to call the police. Because she loves him, and it wasn't a violent thing. Though I've gotten called into those things sometimes too. He was poisoning her, so they had a bad relationship, and they also had a little girl. So when you this kind of shapes my my spectrum on where's our problem here. So when people, when I get to talk to people about their relationship problems, that's kind of like the far end out on, like for me. Like my husband is actively trying to kill me, and I would like to work. You know, that one's pretty bad. To summarize a lot of stuff, their relationship didn't have a whole lot of hope left in it. She was a Christian, and she was praying for him and hoping the best in him, and she found out he was a drug addict a few weeks after they were married. But she loved him, and she kept praying for him, and she was a Christian, and he wasn't. On a cold night, out on some pavement in the city, he got to the bottom of himself, and he gave his life to God. And things began to change in him, you know, and it wasn't just, it's not a Disney movie. Over the next year and a half, 2 years, it was a path to things getting better, you know. And they have a really great relationship now, a really great relationship. A loving and good, marriage. It's wonderful. And I have seen that happen over and over and over again in different kind of people's conflicts. People be able to pull through things that people thought were not, like, you can't get past this stuff. Because either both people were Christians or one was and the other one became one. And it matters so, so much. Because God gets inside of us and begins to change our want-tos, begins to change our heart, begins to change our priorities. Jesus, we use this word love a lot. Hey, I love you, I love you, I love you. What does that mean? Jesus, for Christians, defines what love is. And love looks like Jesus on the cross. Love looks like Jesus taking his clothes off and wiping and taking on the clothing of a servant and wiping the poo off of his disciples' feet and saying, this is what love looks like. Serve each other and love each other like this. That's what love means, defined and understood in light of Jesus. It changes Daniel, will you go and see if somebody needs some help out here? Thanks. It changes this dynamic that we have about am I in it for me? You know, it changes what we're, I lost track here for a second. But like we kind of come at each other from a consumeristic standpoint, right? In our relationships and those sort of things. And we wonder, I'm not getting what I want from him. I'm not getting what I want from her. I'm not getting what I want from my sister, from my sibling, from my whatever else. And it changes how we feel engaged in that thing. But when we're Christians, we're not looking for somebody to fill us. We've already got Jesus that fills us, Jesus that is our love, Jesus that is the first one in our life. And that gives us the strength and the example to love our neighbor and to love our enemy and to love our spouse, to love our siblings, to love people regardless of how well they love us back or not. And I've seen that play out in so many neighbor and marriage relationships that are in conflict, and it makes all the difference in the world when at least you can get one person that says, it doesn't matter how horrible I think that you are and how over it I am with you, I'm going to still keep washing the dishes, and I'm going to make the bed, and I'm going to make you dinner, and I'm going to do whatever love looks like to you and for you. I will do these things for you. Because Christ first loved me. It changes it. It changes that dynamic. Christianity gives us people to remind us of who we are. And we need that sometimes, right? We need people to come alongside us and say, this is what love looks like. This is who you are. You're not alone in this. We have this different example. We have this different hope. That maybe your relationship looks hopeless right now, but you're not in it by yourself. We're in it together, and Christ is in it with you. So there is hope, even when you don't see hope. And we need to be there for each other to point the way up. And when we point the way up, that things can get better. It does. That is what gives us. That's what gives us hope. And looking to Jesus is pointing up. And then prayer is such a big one. We can pray for each other. We can pray for the person that we're in conflict with. We can pray good things. And like, even if we think the person that we're in conflict with is a terrible person and has treated you terribly, praying for them and praying that God would help you see them the way that God sees them. Praying God's best for them. That doesn't mean that we are always praying that God would give return good things for evil. You know, sometimes it's praying for God's justice in somebody's life. Sometimes it's praying that God would bring somebody to repentance, and through repentance, to redemption. And then another huge thing that prayer is when we're in conflict with people. If we can get people ourselves or other people praying together. Praying together. That's so huge. So huge. There's a lot of different kinds of conflict, but I guess I'm pulling from a lot of marriage examples here. But if I can get a couple praying, at least praying parallel for the other person. They may not be able to look at each other. They may not be able to talk to each other, but if they're sitting in and they're barely in the same room together. But if what is anchored inside of them is that I am a Christian and I'm not, and I might be ready to give up him, or I might be ready to give up her, but I'm not ready to give up Jesus yet. And so because of who Jesus is, I will try to act like Jesus in the moment, and I will pray beside her or beside him for her or for him, and pray good things for her and pray good things for him. It matters when you're praying for the other person, and then when you hear the other person praying for you. It makes a difference. It makes a difference. So as Christians, we're going to have conflict. It's an opportunity to make us better. And as Christians, we have so many assets to make us where we are stronger and better and can get through things. Things that other people would think, you can't get through this. It is over and it is done. So I want to go through the scripture. Tori, go back for me for a minute. I want to go back through this, and I want us to find where Paul is using all of these tools of the Christian life to encourage two people. If you look in your Bible, it's not going to be Melody and Lucky, because Sharon did this and she's amazing. Their names are Greek names that are pretty hard to pronounce. So her being wonderful like she is, and somebody that translates scripture, changed it to what the names actually mean, Melody and Lucky. So this is the Apostle Paul. He is writing in prison. He is about to die, and he hears about these two people that he loves that are in a church hundreds of miles away from him, and he's writing this letter to the church. And part of that, he's writing this advice for these two people to get along, and how the church can stand beside these people and help them navigate whatever their conflict is. Dear friends, I love you and I long to see you. Just addressing the church. Please keep on being faithful to the Lord. You are my pride and joy. Melody and Lucky, you belong to the Lord. What's happening there? Yeah, reminding them of their belovedness, reminding them of who they are. So I beg you to stop arguing with each other. Does that matter? You know, when other people are saying, hey, let's get, they're getting it involved a bit and we're going to get involved, talk about ways to healthily do this in a healthy way. But I beg you to stop arguing with each other. And my true partner, and we don't know exactly who this is, but Paul's referring to a specific person. And my true partner, I ask you to help them. Ask you to be a mediator in that. Stop arguing, and this person, who is a wise friend of Paul, help them in this. Help them work out their differences. Then watch what's happening here. These women have worked together with me and with Clement and with the others in spreading the good news. Their names are now written in the book of life. What's he doing there? building them up, encouraging them, reminding them of who they are, pointing them towards higher and better things, right? You guys are more than just the conflict that you are fighting about now. Look at who you are. Look at your long history together. Look at all that you've done together and that you've done with other people. You know, building them up, putting good energy and positive things into their relationship. Reminding them of the things that are already there. All right, Tori. Put that phone down, Tori. Always be glad because of the Lord. Another translation would say, rejoice always. And again, I say rejoice. I will say again, be glad. Always be gentle with others. So he's giving this advice to the church. But remember, it's about these two people getting along. That's the context of this. Always be gentle with others. The Lord will soon be here. When we're in conflict with people, is that something we need to be reminded of? Be gentle with others. And sometimes it's pretty helpful to know, hey, the Lord will soon be here. Don't worry about anything, but pray about everything. With thankful hearts, offer up your prayers and requests to God. Then because you belong to Christ Jesus, God will bless you with the peace that no one can completely understand. And this peace will control the way you think and feel. So what's happening there? No wrong answers. Why is this important that Paul says this to a church and to two people that are fighting? Because God can transform us. Yep. 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 When you're in a terrible fight with somebody, does your heart feel like rejoicing and being gentle and being thankful? No. If someone comes alongside you, beside you, and begins to help you become more of those things, is that helpful? I love that. Gives perspective. Yeah, gets things in perspective. Yeah, a piece of advice I'm going to get to later on is putting things in perspective and asking, who cares? What difference does it make? You know, like in light of these things, in light of all the rejoicing and all the things I have to be thankful for, and in light of who God is, how much does this really matter? You know? All right, Tori.
How much of our conflicts are driven by anxiety?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's huge. Yeah, a lot of... And even if that's not the initial thing that drives our conflict, is anxiety and fear, that makes it worse, right? One of the things that I found to be really helpful is, this isn't my thing, but I heard somebody say long ago that we have a lot of thoughts that are feelings masquerading as feelings. Some people are sharing a lot of their thoughts that they're angry about, or they're frustrated about, or they're anxious about. It's good to key into the feelings, you know, like and recognize that anxiety and God lowers our anxiety by remembering God, by us rejoicing and being thankful for all that we've been given, you know. Finally, my dear friends, keep your minds on whatever is true, pure, right, holy, friendly, and proper. Don't ever stop thinking about what is truly worthwhile and worthy of praise. You know the teachings I gave you, and you know what you heard me say and how you and saw me do it. So follow my example, and the God who gives us peace will be with you. All right, what's Paul doing here? Just my lazy sermon stuff. I heard somebody.
He's reminding of this sort of thing. You go back to the basics.
Yeah.
All this other stuff's going to be much easier.
Yeah.
Reminding them that.
Yeah.
That's
right. Wait. Yeah.
Back
Yeah, it's a reminder of who they are, and maybe not who they are in the moment, but who they are in Christ, right? And calling them to higher things. And when we as an individual are called and to higher things, it gives us hope because we're thinking, I can be better. I can do better. There is more in me than the way that I've been acting, you know? So Paul says this a lot. So follow my example. Yes.
I like that he says, keep your mind on what is true and right. Because I think when we are in conflict with people, we tend to think badly the worst of them, whether or not that might be true. And so he's saying, keep your mind on the things that are true and right and pure and friendly and proper. Don't assume the worst about people and just let that run away with all of your thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's not going to be a conflict? Okay, that's good.
And I think sometimes when we tell people, we often look and see what is wrong, what mm-hmm. is wrong. But sometimes we don't give them the option of what is right. And
yeah.
Clearly giving them that option instead of doing this. Put this off, but put this
in. Yeah, that's right. Pointing people towards what is right instead of just focusing on what's wrong. I love that. Yeah.
And there's not room for other crap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Fill up your soul full of so many good things. There's not room for that stuff. Why is this part, why does he insert this part? It's about all about God stuff, and then so follow my example. You know the teachings I gave you, and you know what you have heard me say and you saw me do, so follow my example. Yeah.
In our head, like, we already know what we're really supposed to be doing. Let's go ahead and do it.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that Carrie and I take pretty seriously as pastors is Paul says this in a different way, follow me as I follow Christ. That we try to live in a way, not perfect, but we try to live in a way where we can say, follow me as I follow Christ, and also remind people that we're not Christ. But people need people to follow, right? And that doesn't just flow one way. We need each other to encourage us, to be an example for us, and to not just in the things that we do, but our the spirit about which the way that we do things is really, really important. Yes, Aisha.
That like a lot of times I haven't always made good decisions in those conflicts as well. So being able to go back, you know, about with that peace and knowing that I need to follow God's example, being able to go back and say, hey, I didn't handle that right. Mm-hmm. You know, let me apologize for what I just said, what I just did.
Yeah.
And being able to just write your wrong.
And if you didn't have that conflict, you wouldn't have had that chance to grow stronger, to see where you can kind of get by this unpleasant person, this unpleasant relationship get thrown off, you know? And that was a really great growing opportunity, right? Yeah. Yes, Joey.
I think what I was hearing when she was talking was humility. Humility
yeah.
in today's world is so important. Everybody's so fixated on themselves. Everything is self.
Yeah.
Being, you know, humble is
yeah.
unusual.
Yeah. Today, so. Yeah. Yeah. And we have that great example in Jesus about humility, you know? And you can't come into the Christian life without going through the gate of humility. It just doesn't work. Another great tool that we have. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Hold on.
I have one more. I could say, not made
Active learning. There we go. Active learning. Active learning. Okay.
Yeah, I'm the phrase, do as I say and not as I do.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we tend to live like that, but Paul is saying, not only do as I say, but do as I do. He's confident in the way he's living his life.
Yeah.
And it's something, it's an example that you can follow and live.
And it's not just when your first name is apostle or pastor that you need to do that. We all need to do that. We all need to live in such a way where we can say, follow me as I follow Christ. Look to me as an example. I'm not Christ. You know, I'm not Christ. You know, but in my falling down and in my getting up, watch me because I am trying to follow Jesus, you know. And I'm trying to, and I will, we need that for ourselves. We need to be that to each other. We need to do that for our children. The faith that your children receive from you is the faith that you live out. Let that scare you a little bit, you know. It's not the things you say, you know.
It's
everything you do. It's, yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Good. So I wanted to hold off on giving this to you guys. I don't know if we've got enough for everybody. So if you're if you are with somebody, then share. If you're going to go back to the same house with somebody, then share. I need one. Well, nope, never mind. I've got one. Okay. I didn't give that out to you earlier because I knew you guys would not pay attention to the active learning experience, and you'd be reading that stuff. So we're not going to go over this whole thing. I just wanted to put some tools in your hands for dealing with conflict. I am going to go over this first page, and then for fun at the end, after we get some tools navigating conflict, we're going to help Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un resolve their conflict. Okay, we're going to use the tools that we have. And then we can like find their email addresses and email them like what we've come up with about how to solve their differences. Okay, Kim Jong, what? Okay, Donald Trump is the president of the United States. What? He is the supreme leader. Is that the right title? He's the supreme leader of North Korea. And we'll get into that in a minute. I'll summarize their conflict in a minute. Yeah, okay. So, but we're going to solve it. So it's basically done after they get our email today, our solutions. So just some very like quick stuff on dealing with conflict. So learn to embrace it and resolve it. That's kind of what I'm doing here today, trying to encourage you guys to see this as good stuff. Not standing up for yourself is not fighting fair. That's important for passive and passive-aggressive people. I mean, passive-aggressive people are fighting. They're just doing it in a not great way. Ask, so what? My great-grandfather would always say, in 100 years, is this going to matter? In 100 years, is this going to matter? We can only control us. And until we accept this, we will just keep making our conflicts worse. Man, when people are in, like, this seems like a simple thing, but when people are in conflict, what they really want to change is the other person. Things will get better as soon as that person changes. And I'll be better, and I'll change when that person changes. And they can't, like, and you can tell them this over and over again, like, hey, the only person you can change is you. But man, they're just laser-locked focused that the other person needs to change. So I'm going to put that in there early. You know, the only person you can change is you. Take responsibility. Find the courage to take responsibility for your own actions, words, attitudes, and happiness. You cannot say that I'm not happy because of you. It's not someone else's responsibility to make you happy. That's not a perfect statement, but it's fine. This one is really big because people mess this one up a lot. Deal with conflict privately and in person. That means where you see their eyeballs. Twitter and Facebook, text messaging, emailing is not okay. Not okay for dealing with conflict. The more important that it is, the more personal it is, the more emotional that it is, the more important it is for you to be eyeball to eyeball with somebody, maybe even holding their hands, and say, this really matters to me. This is going on. I would like to work this stuff out. That's where you have that conversation. Do not tweet whatever the other things are, my Facebook things to people. Don't do those things. Don't write. People are actually really terrible about emailing. Do not write thoughtful emails in a conflictual situation. Go and talk to the person. A lot of times people just do that to get something off their chest. Absolutely do not do that. It's not okay. You go talk to the person. Have the courage to look them in the eyes as a human being, and you express in dialogue what's going on. Okay? Seek mediation when appropriate. And don't ask somebody that's on your team. And this sounds like attorney kind of stuff, and that can be, but it can also be a friend. So, like, for example, if Carrie and I are having a hard time, I'm not going to try to get somebody that's going to be on my team to come in the middle of this, because that's a dysfunctional thing called support building and triangulating and that kind of stuff. It's bad. But what I will is I will invite somebody in that either is pro Nathan and Carrie, like not Nathan or Carrie, not pro Carrie, not pro Nathan, but like they really want our relationship to work out. That's what they really want, you know, and they know us and they love us enough that's what they really want. Or I might even talk to somebody like her dad and say, hey, Carrie and I are going through this. And I know, like, he is going to be on her side. I don't have to worry about that. Like, if I want to be above board in finding somebody to help us talk through a situation, I will err on that side for sure. Find somebody that I believe is wise and is on her side, not my side, to get in the middle to talk about those things, you know, because I feel confident and strong enough that I can be wrong and I can talk about those things and that kind of stuff. But usually you want somebody. It can be a counselor, but it can also be a friend, a trusted friend that you believe is pro for both of you, you know, and that can be your siblings. That can be in a sibling fight, you know. Mom and dad, hopefully, if they're sane and healthy, good people, they want both of the kids to get along. So that's a good. Moms and dads are always constantly mediators. You know, they're not like, I want this child to win. They want the siblings to get along and there be sanity in the household. That's what they want. Learn to share your feelings appropriately, maturely, and respectfully. Avoid descriptive statements. Not saying, hey, you're a terrible person. Describe what someone does. Determine to see the best in people. Attack the problem together. I like sitting, like one of the kind of a little getting along tactic is to sit on the same side of the table with somebody or to take a walk with them. Because if you're across the table, it seems like it is body posture, human language of we are against each other. If you're taking a walk together, if you're sitting on the same side of the table together and put the problem out in front of you, you're working on it together. And those simple things, it matters. It's us against the problem. Don't negotiate based on who has the most power or rights to something, but on the Christian values of love and justice and compassion. So you'll see this on the next page, but basically, like, that's an evolution of a progression of argument. Like when you're really small and you're toddlers and you want a toy, what do? You just take it. Mine. And then once you get to be like 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, then what do you start doing? You start talking about fair. Hey, that's not fair. This is mine. It's not fair. You're talking about who has the right to this, right? And a lot of people don't get past those two things, you know, of mine and, hey, this is... And this is what's fair. But there's this place that is beyond that, that it's about values, you know? Like I may sacrifice my rights, I may sacrifice my power to live into my values, right? And good and mature people need to do that. That's the place that we operate from. Learn to say I'm sorry and I was wrong in meaningful ways. It's an important part of my life to get on. I don't handle things right as a dad. To get on my get eyeball to eyeball with my kids and say, "Hey, Daddy didn't handle that right. I was wrong, and I'm sorry." And if that's a difficult thing for you to say that you're wrong, then you're probably a narcissist. And if you are a narcissist, then you probably think like, "Well, I'm just never wrong, so I would never say that." Or anyway, narcissists are incurable. At least the ones I've known. It's difficult. Anyway, yeah. There are degrees. There are degrees. Anyway, psychology, look that stuff up about the hope for narcissism. It's pretty difficult. Yeah, no, Mary, you're not. Okay. Yeah, it is difficult. It is difficult. Okay, be clear and specific about what you want and what it means to you. That looks like Justin. I would really like to have that shirt, and if I did, I would feel so pretty. Can I have that shirt? Okay, see? Just simple explanation. All right. We got problems in the world to solve. Levels of conflict, negotiation, arbitration, mediation, and ruling from a higher authority. Negotiation is like me and Adam talking about our problem. You know, we're negotiating it. Mediator is we can't get this thing worked out, so we're going to ask Ashley to have coffee with us and say, "Hey, we're having this impasse here. Will you help us out?" That can also be calling an attorney or a counselor or something. And then ruling from a higher authority is, I set a boundary, you're not respecting that, here's a protective order, you know? And that doesn't, there's hope in all of those situations. It's not like once you get to ruling from a higher authority that it's all gone, you know? Gave a life example of murder, like trying to murder someone and then things getting better. There's hope in all things. Already talked about the positions, conflict styles. Just look over that. I'm not going to go over the how to navigate conflict when you're around it. But we're going to put that stuff into use here. So how to navigate conflict when you're in it, that is a tool that I've adapted from several other things, and I typically use that with married people. And if you're really in conflict with somebody, you can't do this by yourself. By yourselves. You just can't do it. But you can do that with somebody to help you. So we are going to be those people that are going to help Donald Trump. Go to the next slide. Dory, wake up. Okay, here we go. We are going to help these dear leaders of our world. Okay. So the conflict is, and you guys can flesh this out a little more if we need to in resolving this. Donald Trump, President of the United States, and all that personality and position that means. Kim Jong-un is the dear leader, the supreme leader of North Korea. He has developed some nuclear weapons systems and ballistic missiles in recent years, and he's been doing tests and launching those in near proximity of our allies, been putting out threatening messages and things like that. This president has been sending threatening messages back to the supreme leader. So they're just... they're just in a bad spot right now, and they need some help. And the whole world really like hangs in the balance here. Not joking. Like it could potentially go wrong where we all die. So we're going to help these people out. So we're just going to go through this thing. So what conflict style does each person begin with?
Competing.
That's right. So that one's really interesting, and I'm glad that you brought that one up. That could be they are competing. That could be one that that Un goes for. He can't mutually destroy America, but he can he can't take a big bite out of it or its allies or something. So that would be kind of maybe along. So that's a possibility. But right now they're competing, right? Because when you see they're tweeting at each other or whatever, it's about like who's the boss and who's in power and they want to be, both of them want to be the big man, right? Both of them want to be the one, the boss. They want to be in charge. Okay. So what negotiating positions does each person start from?
Power,
right? No one's appealing to the higher right. It's about my button is bigger, right? You remember that? Yeah. I've got a bigger button than you. And Kim is saying, hey, but I have a button, you know? And I can launch this to, and it's important that he gets out that he can, all the things that he can do, you know, how far he can launch the rockets and those sort of things. So what is the problem that needs to be resolved from Donald's perspective?
Yeah.
A couple of good things. Needs to not look weak because he wants to be strong, right? So there's ego there. Also, doesn't want Kim to have nuclear weapons and to nuke people. Doesn't even want him to have the potential to nuke people. Anything else? That's pretty solid. Like that would be a win for Donald Trump if he could look good and strong and also take the power away from Un, right? From Kim. Okay. All right, Kim's perspective. What's the problem from his bit? You got to know a little bit more about. Yeah. Yeah. So he's got ego, sense of grandeur. He's not crazy, but he is evil, you know? Yes.
Why should America get to hold all the nuclear weapons? They're a threat to us.
Yeah. So we are regularly threatening them and have been for a long time. So we put troops on their border. We do very threatening military operations and drills on their border and around them all the time. So we do their version of like shooting rockets off in different places and have for a long time. Somebody else had their hand up. Yeah.
I think he sees being a nuclear nation as the only thing that keeps him in power.
Yeah.
Because he knows that he has no negotiation.
Yeah.
No negotiation power beyond that.
He doesn't want to be cooed. Yeah. And nukes really help with that.
Very concretely.
Yeah.
Donald Trump doesn't get assassinated if he looks weak.
Right.
Kim Jong-un potentially does get assassinated.
Yeah.
If he looks weak.
Yeah.
He also has a nation of people that are starving.
Yeah.
And he has to marginally keep fed.
Yeah.
And they've been doing that largely with aid.
Yeah.
And so the nuclear weapons are a tool of leverage to continue to receive international aid for food for his people.
Yeah.
So that he doesn't get assassinated. And it's a tool to look strong to his cronies. So that he doesn't get assassinated.
Yeah.
This guy has a little bit on the line.
He has a lot. Yeah. Yeah. So
just saying.
So he can't look weak to anybody, you know. Just like Donald Trump does not, neither one of these guys want to look weak, right? So this is really great, and I picked this one because it's not overly simplistic, you know. Cannot look weak and can't lose, you know, because
little man syndrome.
Little Rocket Man syndrome. There we go. So what are ways that each person has contributed to the problem?
Name calling.
Yep.
Threatening.
We're both threatening each other, both countries. Even
posturing.
Yep. Wait. Not taking responsibility. Yep. And it's particularly important as you're threatening each other that each person not look weak in the face of threats, right? That raises the stakes on looking weak. A lot of good stuff. So threatening, not taking responsibility, name calling, past attempts to resolve the issue.
Sanctions.
Yep. In the 90s, we gave them a bunch of money because we thought, well, they're poor and we gave them money. Then they'll do good things with that. And then... Yeah, didn't work real well. Anything else?
We tried ignoring them.
Threats. We tried ignoring them. threatening each other. That hasn't helped. A lot of impasses here. So possible solutions to the problem.
Take them out.
Take them out. Nuke them. That's one of them. Yep.
Don't nuke them.
Okay. Assassination. Okay. All right. Assassination. Yep.
Mediation.
Okay.
Get other countries involved.
Yep.
Yeah. His position is desperation.
Yeah.
Right. He's going to get assassinated. But literally, his people are starving to death.
Yeah.
This is a guy that drinks $40,000 a month worth of whiskeys.
Yeah.
So. He is desperate for money. Their economy, I read recently that their army gets 3 months off every year to go to forage for food.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So his position is desperate on multiple levels.
Support a coup, assassination, send them food.
Wait it out.
Yeah.
We've
been waiting for a long time, but that could
be on board.
Yeah, possible solution. Both. Mainly for those two. For those, well. Both of them being humble. Yeah. Yeah. We could stop threatening each other. So, like, that would. I think that's one of the things that Kim would want is, like, backing off our military and our stuff. You know, we can take them out from long, long distance. We don't have to be in their faces. We can threaten people pretty successfully. Okay.
I don't know if we do, they are not asking for what they need. They're saying, I don't want you to do this, which isn't really helpful.
Wait, say that again.
So, like, because they don't want to be wrong, they're not asking for what they need. They're just saying, I don't want you to do this.
Yeah.
I don't want you to have this. They're not saying, I really just need you to, like, be nice to people.
Yeah. Yeah. What if they could actually talk to each other? Like there was a meeting where they could talk. A non-cooing, a non-assassinating meeting where they could have this conversation.
How do you back away from your threatening position?
Without looking weak?
Well, that, but in knowing, I mean, he's third generation.
Yeah.
His grandfather was that way. His father was that way. He's that way. It just keeps getting stronger and stronger from that perspective.
Yeah.
How do you back away from the threatening position that you maintain and I don't feel confident that he's going to come towards you?
So essentially, like, they both give each other ultimatums. So imagine having given someone in your life an ultimatum and having to, like, humbly say, okay, here's a peace branch, like,
Yeah.
It's humbling.
Yeah. And America's probably in the better position to do that, the president of America, than the dear leader. Okay.
We used to do CBM, confidence building measures.
Yeah.
Where we could do some small nice thing.
Yeah.
And then the other team could do some small nice thing.
Yeah.
Like not even central to the conflict.
Yeah.
Just confidence building measures that each of us would make some little gesture of goodwill. And then make some little gesture back. You know,
yeah. Yeah. What are the, maybe not being able to deal with the thing head on, but let's deal with the small stuff.
What Paul was saying reminded me of parents saying, say one nice thing about the other person.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And whatever, and possibly like whatever they decided, both of them would need to be able to walk away from that with big puffed up chest and say, I walked away from this meeting and I won this thing. And that there's ways that can happen where they can both walk away and go back to their people and say, I took this from Donald Trump. I took this from Kim.
And part, you know, you talk about meeting in private.
Yeah.
You know, as one of the tools.
Yeah.
I read a couple years ago that, like, JFK and Khrushchev had secret dialogues that nobody knew because the hardliners on both sides wouldn't allow it.
Yeah.
But that was part of what solved a lot of kept off the Cold War coming in.
Wow.
Secret meetings.
So cool. All right. So what is one solution? So this is really great because this is the way that this works. What is one solution? We're just going to pick for these people. What's one solution that they could try? We're just going to go with one. We've got several that are
possible.
What?
One
Just one nice thing. Just say one. That's a small actionable thing. Say one nice thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think they would have a better chance of getting along better if we just got out of it, I think. But I think that about a lot of things. Secret meeting idea. Okay. All right. We don't have to decide on what the one thing is. We're getting it. But and then we set up another meeting to discuss that. That's why we have the secret bat phone, perhaps, that they can talk to each other or secret meetings or whatever. And it's like, hey, this is, and then revisit how that one thing was going, and then find some way to reward each other for the progress. Maybe they would swap, like, you're the man tweets to each other. I don't know what would be awesome for each of them. Okay. I just wanted to put some tools in your toolbox. I want to solve some world's problems. That's like a little bonus on top.